Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
iZotope and Native Instruments have teamed up to create the start-to-finish bundle that home recording guitar nerds have been waiting for. Plus, you, dear listener, get an extra 10% off with Guitar Nerds by using discount code NERDS10 at the checkout on iZotope.com. From the creative spark to the final touch, their new bundles include pretty much everything you could possibly need, which is great because it's far too easy to sink hundreds of pounds and a big chunk of your time into just picking up random plugins. The Music Production Suite 4.1 and Complete 13 bundle contains over 30 intelligent mixing, mastering and repair plugins, 65 premium instruments, 20 plus expansions and over 35,000 sounds. And if that's a bit basic for you, they've also bundled Music Production Suite 4.1 with Complete 13 Ultimate, which gives you everything that makes Complete 13 incredible, plus a colossal library of added synths, sampled instruments and effects, 115 plus premium instruments and effects, 39 Native Instruments expansions and over 65,000 sounds. Whew. It sounds like a lot. It is. It's very good, very comprehensive. And as we've come to expect from iZotope, it's very good value. If you're looking to get into home recording, I cannot recommend it more highly. And if you're already into home recording, it really is the one-stop shop for making what you do sound better. This podcast is entirely treated and produced using iZotope plugins, and Native Instruments have been responsible for almost every synth or sample you've heard on our Guitar Nerds jingles. Check out their great new bundles on iZotope.com or follow links in the description of this podcast and use discount code NERDS10 at the checkout for 10% off anything in the iZotope arsenal.
Hello, and I'm going to wait for this bus to drive past my house. Yeah.
There I literally was side-eyeing the cat just now, thinking, don't meow.
My cat's been sitting in this room staring at me for some time, and it's just left, so I think she's definitely disappointed, because I'm on my own. Emma's away today, so it's that she's definitely disappointed, but hopefully that means she's not just going to meow at me for the next hour or so.
Yeah,
okay, roads are quiet, so I'm probably going to keep this in, but, you know, here's the intro anyway, dear listener.
Oh, God.
Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds podcast. That's it. The world's number one guitar podcast. I am your host, Joe Brenton, joined this week by Naomi McLeod.
I mean, I think. Yeah. Who knows, Joe?
Who knows? No,
thank you for having me. Hello. Hello, yeah. Dear listener.
Hello. Hello. Welcome back, Naomi. It's been a few weeks since we've had you on an episode.
It has, indeed. Yeah, let's catch up all together.
Yes.
All two of us.
Yes, exactly.
I won't sing just the two of us because it's a great song, and, you know.
Thank you for not singing on the podcast. we did actually just catch up on this call for like 45 minutes, which was virtually a whole podcast. So
and yet we somehow still have so much to talk about. Yeah. it's my favorite kind of catch-up call is when 7 hours later you're both like, oh, I guess I should, you know, sleep, or like, I don't know, go to work. I'm very late. Yeah, absolutely. No better feeling than having plenty to chat about.
Exactly. And we do, dear listener, there's an awful lot going on. First of all, I want to just apologise again. The podcast for the second week in a row is out a day late. I've had a whole bunch going on in my private life that's made it very difficult to keep on top of everything. But I assure you, actually, I think if you, dear listener, knew everything that was happening at the moment, you'd be pretty amazed that I managed to keep this podcast without a single missing episode for however many years. This has gone on for.
Can confirm. The man is a hero.
There you go. Yes.
You don't need to answer that. I'm aware it's only me and you here. But yeah. Can confirm to you, dear listener, our dear Mr. Branton is continuing to smash it as ever.
Thank you. But yes, I am actually, I'm really unwell as well at the moment, dear listener. I'm chock full of painkillers and I've worked my way through a quarter of a bottle of Johnnie Walker Black Label just to be here. I've got a mouthful of ulcers again. You know, I've had this in the past. In fact, in the past, I can't remember who, a wonderful listener, a dear listener, recommended to me lysine tablets, which I think are an amino acid.
What type of tablet? Sorry.
Lysine.
Lysine. Not heard of that.
No, yeah, it's good. They work. They get rid of ulcers. I just, I completely forgot about them because I just haven't had them in so long. But I get them really bad, like real sort of full mouthfuls. To be honest, I've been in bed for a couple of days anyway, just absolutely out for the count. And I've started taking them again, already feeling a bit better. So they are definitely on for the win. Anyway, enough about things like that. Where to start? I kind of want to, maybe we should pick up with where things were last week. I was talking with Matt about the fact that I wanted to get, well, that I'd got a Fender Bassbreaker 1830 for my guitarist, Tim. It's absolutely fantastic, but it's incredibly loud. So I figured we'd attach an attenuator to it. And found that actually the particular way that this amp is built means that there is no way of doing that without cutting into it, customizing some wires, adding some extra bits and bobs on the back. Mm. So you can get the custom work done. That's totally fine. But I was sort of weighing up. I was like, is it worth doing this? This seems rubbish that this basic thing has been left off an amp that is so insanely loud. It sort of made me lose faith in the amp a little bit, even though it sounds great. I was really like, really, Fender? Like, how deaf was the person that was designing this to not put an attenuator on this product? I don't understand. You can't, it's giggable at one. Yeah, it's just,
oh,
it's,
wow. Yeah.
It's the maddest amplifier, Naomi.
And run me through again, what are the controls?
So there are two channels on the 1830. Mm. There is an 18-watt channel and a 30-watt channel. On the 18-watt channel, you simply have volume and a master tone. And it's darker sounding, naturally, I guess. Less headroom and just that single, you know, tone shelf.
Yeah.
Just means it's a bit darker. And then the 30-watt channel, which has three bands of EQ and, again, a volume. So there's no gain throughout, which I love. It's just a wonderful, brittle, clean EL84. So it's got that sort of voxy, clean sound, which I love. And so, yeah, that's the nature of the amp. But it will sound insanely trebly if you had the treble on two or three. So it's
hyper responsive.
Yes, it's extraordinarily bright. Honestly, if you leave treble in the middle at 12 o'clock, the sound of your hand moving up the fretboard and running along the strings will deafen you. Like that, it will be it's like, you know, fingernails down a chalkboard, sort of horrible. So you've really got to tailor it. But once you do tailor it, it sounds great. It's so unruly and brash and like a big, proper, gorgeous sounding valve amp. And I'm like, wow, they're so underrated because of that. This is a fantastic sounding amplifier. But it is that volume that, you know, being at one and being pretty much, we're a loud band, you know, he can maybe get it to two in a practice sort of thing. And that's, and we're, like I say, we're loud and he uses a lot of effects that are only going to add more on top of that. Mm-hmm. And so Tim is worried about the show where we have to play a little quieter. He'll have nowhere to go. So in response to that, I was like, well, let's get an attenuator. And then you can use the rest of the amp. Maybe we could even get some natural gain out of the amp with an attenuator. It would be lovely. Mm-hmm. And that's when I stumbled across on forums, on Reddit, and a few other places that lots of people have come up with solutions. They've had power soaks cut into the back. They've had some of the wires cut internally and then extra female jack sockets drilled into the back so you could add an external attenuator.
Oh, wow. Okay. So this is a really... A documented sort of mod then. Mm,
yes, yes. Yeah. Well, the Bass Breaker series has been running, I don't know when it started, probably it must have been 2013, 2014, something like that.
Sure, because I remember it being in the store I worked in Dublin and playing through it many times. I don't specifically remember that Which about one? It, but then it was a big loud store, wasn't it? So
yeah, of course. Maybe. And they did a lot in that range. They did the 007, which was their 7-watt range. They do the 15, which comes as a head or a combo.
I remember the 15, yeah, and I remember really liking it, and I don't remember there being any wild issue like that with it.
See, that it's is just, the thing it, yeah, that, it's just, that's one of the things. Maybe I should sell it and get the 15.
I assume you've been running it on 18, have you?
There's not a lot of volume difference between the two. It's not like one's quieter and one's louder. It's that they're different voicings more than anything else. But I think in either, the volume control is essentially useless. I've heard from Blake Wyland over at the Tone Mob. He owned a 007 and he said he loved that, but it wasn't loud enough to gig. So I can't go down to there. The 15's the obvious middle ground. Yes. I can get it as a combo, a single 12-inch combo. They also do it as a head, and they do a gorgeous-looking single 12-inch extension cap. So that is a popular alternate option. But I do also love I love the 1830. It's really cool. I could just get the mod done. So there is that option. Also, it's worth pointing out, the 1830 has been discontinued. It's the only amp in the range to be discontinued, which is funny.
Yeah.
But... yeah. And you get a couple of additionals. Even on the 15, there's an effects loop, which you don't have on the 1830. And there's reverb, which is
on the 15, but not the 1830.
Yeah, yeah. The 1830 is oddly...
interesting spec, isn't it?
Yeah, it's an odd spec. You know, those are the controls. Two master volumes, one master tone, and the other a three band, and that's it. That's all you get. I wonder
is the entire chassis just taken up by power up? There's no room for an effects loop, you don't understand. it's just all power.
I think it's likely. But anyway, so that was where I am. And I am, I'll be honest, dear listener, despite all your wonderful suggestions, I am erring on the side of buying the 15, because the thing is, Tim really loved the Bass Breaker. So there is that. But I've had some fantastic suggestions from the group. I got a direct message, a couple of direct messages about this, and also some people put stuff in the group. So we'll kind of go through both. So Martin Cox, he messaged me saying that he was screaming at the podcast when we were talking about this because he had the solution. The solution he had was very good. He wanted to talk about the Laney Lionheart combos. Do you like those? Do you think they're good?
I do. I have found they're a little bit of a marmite. I feel like people sort of love them or hate them. But yeah, over the years, I've not played through any, but I've played with people who have owned them. And always found them quite nice. Always found them... I'm trying to remember what model it was.
Certainly, I think the 5-watt was very popular for your sort of smaller... it's a smaller bedroom player. The 20 watt, the L20T, is quite desirable. But
I think it was the L5. It was like a 1x12 that I played with a guitarist who had it, and it sounded quite sweet. Didn't sound too brittle. And I don't know. Maybe it was really suited to just the style that she was playing. But it's probably the one that I'm most familiar with over the years. Because there were a few models that go quite a bit bigger, weren't there?
They did a whole range. It was a really unusual thing for Laney to go for. And actually, one of the other suggestions that we had in the Facebook group itself, Bruce Bacon had suggested the Laney LC, which is the, I think that's the Cub. Is that right? I'm going to have to.
Is that a mini, like a 2-watt type of thing?
No, it was a 15, and I think that was what they called the Cub, which was kind of Laney taking on the. Yes, it was. Yeah, I just needed to double check before I went down a rabbit hole talking about it. But the Cub, or maybe the Super Cub, it was called. I'm not sure which name they ended up on, but it was kind of them doing the Blues Junior.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
And it was definitely cool, but this was the start. That was kind of the start of Laney being like, maybe we can make some cool old 50s style amps. And certainly they were. You know, they were great. The Lionheart was very cool.
Mm-hmm.
They go for a lot of money, the Lionhearts now. So these are my two issues with the Lionheart, despite it definitely being a great amp, and I have fond memories of it as well. I think it's tonally the right palette for Tim. Downside is they go for tons of money now.
Do they?
Yeah, there's like over $1,000 for the 20-watt one now.
Oh my God.
And wow. I don't think they make them anymore. Or if they do make them, I think they're Chinese now rather than UK built. And I understand, I don't know that I don't know firsthand, but I have heard mixed reviews about the newer ones. So I assume you'd want one of the UK ones. Goodness knows why it makes a difference what country something's made in. But that's certainly what I've heard, whether that's just, you know, the random mutterings of madmen or factual, I don't know. The second issue I have is it's denim.
My well-dressed friend, is this the extent to which you have now styled your performance art? Have we extended to a no-denim zone? And further yet, a no-denim amp zone.
To an extent. So it's not specifically that it's denim. I think my issue with, and I said this to Martin in messages, I was like, it looks like a hipster amp. It's the sort of amp that you buy if you play a built guitar. Like, it's that. I take all my advice on gear purchases from the JHS channel sort of rig, which concerns me. It's like, I don't believe a built guitar has ever been gigged. I think it's exclusively owned by people who play in their bedrooms and offices. Oh, and dear. I kind of feel the same thing about the Lionheart. I'm being obtuse here, obviously, dear listener. I'm sure I'm wrong, but...
I think like built. That's using my small voice to defend what I think are a brand that do some awesome design.
They do.
I understand, of course, what you're saying in terms of maybe your perception of a certain design and having maybe just not seen it out and about as much.
That's
there
it.
There are definitely similar brands where I really note having not seen someone out in the wild with, let's say. And very often they are those unbelievably considered, beautifully designed brands, and you just think, you just there is something nice about seeing an instrument get bashed within an inch of its life for the sake of art a little bit. And you worry when it is maybe such a bespoke design that it becomes like a small puppy that you don't want to be touched off anything, let alone the riser of a festival stage in the rain.
Exactly. I think there is a gulf between the gigging musician and the sort of office bedroom collector playing musician in mm-hmm. what they look for in equipment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think there is that simplicity and road hardiness that people are looking for in gigging musicians look for, where they're less fussed about the other bits and bobs.
Mm-hmm.
And it's weird because I feel like I sort of get to bridge both things.
I would agree. Yeah, I've, you know, obviously what I have known in the time that we've been chatting professionally of your taste definitely visits many areas of the sort of spectrum between your absolute tool for physical and musical destruction versus your, you know, oil painting level designed instrument where not a grain of the wood has passed without consideration.
And I
do get it. I think sometimes the cliche of, you know, the penniless artist does apply as well. You know, sometimes gigging musicians don't necessarily have the budget for beautiful sort of bespoke builds. And I think that maybe kind of informs it a little bit as well. But yeah, it's an interesting one. Back to your little denim amp.
Well, yes. So
back to telling me why denim affects the buyability of the amp.
Tim will hate the look of it. I think that's the bottom line. I don't think he'd be seen dead playing an amp that looks like that. So
okay.
I think it automatically disqualifies what is a fantastic amp that I would strongly consider having around the house. I think it's a very good looking amplifier
house. Very smart looking.
It is. It is indeed. Another suggestion, one of the ones that the Bruce Bacon has made, is the Marshall Studio 15 amp, which is certainly, or which is sometimes called the 4001 or 4E01. I don't know how mm-hmm. Americans would draw on that. But like, it, you know, it's a very simple 15 watt combo with 6V6 tubes and a 12 inch speaker. Like, it's, you know, it looks like a fantastic product. The studio seems like a great little piece of gear. That I am interested in. But I have to say, when it comes to Marshall stuff, I've just been so amazed with the SV series, the SV20Cs.
Oh, yeah. That's not one that I'm familiar with. So do you want to bring me up to speed?
So for a start, it's Marshall doing the aesthetic that I really like. So moving to the top mounted controls, that sort of Vox style panel at the top and then a grill cloth underneath. I wish, now you can get some, that the square Marshall logo. I just love that logo so much. And there are some limited edition versions of the SV20 where you can get that black writing on a gold background on the square front. You get it with like a fawn grill cloth, which is gorgeous, and it's available in like a green, like a British Racing green, an almost fiesta-ish red, or like a Pelamy blue sort of thing. That is very cool. Or you can get the I think the original, which is called the Studio Vintage, which has the sort of the curly Marshall logo, should we call it, and more predictable black Tolex with gold piping.
Mm-hmm. These are really stylish. Even the curly logoed, maybe more standard versions. Both the I'm looking at a deep burgundy quite a gold. I can't tell if it's basket weave or
I thought it was like
or tweed
fawn.
Grill. But
was it tweed? Oh, you said
well
burgundy,
on the deep on the burgundy one. There's quite a golden sort of basket weave looking grill, and then there's also a fawn grill on the green coloured one with the white top plate and and that square logo. This is a really, really smart looking combo, I have to say. It's not a Marshall model that I've seen before. It sort of reimagines their styling entirely, actually. It kind of puts their branding in a different light to what the eye is used to.
I feel a little bit like they're sort of taking a leaf out of the whatever the company is that they hire to make their little Bluetooth speakers, because those things look great. Mm-hmm. and Marshall, I fell out of love with them so much over the years because I just don't like the look. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't really like the sound generally of a modern. There's something a little compressed about them, I find, but I'm certainly willing to reevaluate my opinion on that based on, and that's incredibly vain. Whatever the word is, where I only care about things about how they look.
Vapid.
It's very vapid of me. But this amp is enough to make me reevaluate that. I love that there's no gain and master volume. I love amps where you're just dealing with, you know, just loudness, as it is called on the control on this. And the addition of a presence control is always great for making things extra sort of brittle and nasally and nasty. I just can't believe, you know, they're very well priced, like £800. They are 10-inch speakers.
So are these current? These are current catalogue then, right?
As far as I'm aware, yeah, I think they're...
I'm seeing them on the site. So this is cool. Yeah, always nice. You can get it new. Might give you a bit of time to have a think about it if you do end up getting something else, just knowing that there are more than, you know, one of it floating about on the market.
Yeah.
Not that sort of hen's teeth kind of thing.
Yeah.
Personally, I'd be quite tempted by this as an option. I think what you've described of the sound is there, the styling is there, the spec is lovely.
Mm. Yeah, this is definitely high on my list of things that are extraordinarily cool. Other options that I've had, Bruce's other suggestions I can't quite go with, I'm afraid. I really appreciate them nonetheless, Bruce. A DV Mark Galileo 15C. I think that is a fantastic amplifier. I actually really love all this stuff that DV Mark does. Whether it's valve or Class D for guitar amps, I think they do a great job of making just gorgeous sounding jazz amplifiers. They nail that. And
they're very smooth DV Marks that I've heard.
Yes, they are. I completely agree. And
that same butteriness that Mark bass tend to have.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. And like a little attention to detail, like one of the things I love about Mark bass is they go, yeah, we're Class D, but here's one of our controls, which is called Vintage Loudspeaker Emulator. And it essentially can turn your clean, clinical Class D bass amp into a bit more of a woofy, Ampeg-y, acoustic 360 sounding rig. And I really like that about Mark bass. They know who their audience is, the people who want those super clean, crystal clean things. But if you kind of want a Mark bass and you like vintage sounds, they can do that as well. And I think that's very cool. Not something that gets shouted about enough about their amplifiers. And I think they bring the same thing to their guitar amplifiers as well. Like one of the amps that impressed me the most that they did was their Raw Dog. Did you ever see this? The Raw Dog 60.
I don't think I did.
It was the Eric Gales signature combo. And it's super, like, it's a very compact 12-inch with just, again, like three bands of EQ, a master volume, and a reverb control.
And
they just sounded great. They were just so unbelievably clean, and it was the perfect jazz amplifier. Nice. I think potentially not quite enough vibe, maybe for what I'm looking for.
But, yeah, sure. Just looking at it there, though, I love it. So I love having so few controls that it's really, really hard to get any sort of decision fatigue, you know, where there's just a decided spectrum of tonal options in the amp. I really like that commitment in amp design. It's basically, this is what I will do for you, and that's it. Dial in what you can, I guess, you know. Yeah. I would be quite keen to try that. It's very cool looking, nicely styled as well.
It is. Yeah, they are very cool. So that's kind of, you know, that's kind of where I'm at. I think, mm-hmm. you know, I really have appreciated a lot of the suggestions. I appreciate also that I'm not taking any of those suggestions on board, but I don't know what I'm going to do. You know what? I might try and mod the 1830 first, and then, you know what, if I need to move any further on from that, then I will. So
yeah, I mean, you know, you could say nothing ventured, nothing gained.
Well, there's no gain on these. It's just a master volume.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks. Well, thank you for stomping all the way over that joke. That was brutal. There isn't even a third person here to gently laugh at that.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that.
You just had to go in and murder that. Okay. Okay, that's fine. I also know you won't cut that, so.
Yeah, I absolutely would not.
Mr. Branton's true colours, dear listener, I would say. Yeah.
I apologize. So we'll see, dear listener. We'll see where I get to with that over the next little while. But
I'd like to see you try the mod. Genuinely, I think. I think if you were to, I'm not saying, I know you haven't said whether you are or aren't going to move it on if you do go for something else instead. But it would be a shame to move something like that on, having not tried a mod that would potentially give you everything you like about the tone and the output that you need.
I think so too. Also, I paid £200 for it. Like,
oh my god! What have you? Sorry, have you had it for years?
No. I bought it for Tim for his birthday a couple of months ago.
Oh bloody hell! Okay, right.
British swearing's allowed. The algorithm doesn't recognize. British swearing. That was very colonialist of me.
Right. Okay. Right. So fruit and crumpets, you bought it only a few months ago.
Yes, exactly that. Yeah.
Cool. And yeah, no one's going to sniff at £200, are they?
No, exactly. Yeah. So they're just hard amps to move on, I think, really.
Right.
Because they're huge, very heavy. And, and if, to anyone who knows, far too loud.
Yeah. Yeah, the tone payoff comes with a price, obviously.
Yeah, but the mod certainly isn't going to make it any less valuable, basically. So it's probably worth pursuing.
Yeah, could have the opposite effect, even if you did still move it on from what you're saying.
Exactly.
Cool. Awesome.
So we'll see. We'll see where I get to. And leave that one with me, and I'll see where we get to. Naomi, did you see what happened to Alpha Male Tea Party today?
Oh, I did. I did indeed. It's always an awful thing. You always, I think your stomach always lurches seeing any band have, whether it's a lockup or like happened to our good friends this morning, their van be broken into, no less, just returning from a tour and emptied by the sounds of things. You always do a secondhand sort of awful stomach lurch when you hear it, and when it's someone you know or someone whose gear you've seen close up at gigs as you've loved the magic of their music, it really does hurt to see it happened.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, so dear listener, if you, I did put a post in the post from the band in the group. I appreciate not, you know, most of our audience aren't actually, based this side of the pond, but Alpha Male Tea Party, good friends of the podcast. And if you've been listening to the podcast for a long time, you'll remember we've had Tom on the podcast in the past, Tom the guitarist. We've even done, back when guitarists were doing videos on YouTube, we even did an interview with Tom about his rig at Arctangent. Well, all that stuff, you know, all those, that lovely Daphne Blue Highway 1 Telecaster, which Tom has pretty much written every single song for Alpha Male Tea Party over the last 15 years on, that got nicked along with everything else that they own out of the back of their van when they're at a service station that they stopped off for breakfast just outside of London.
Brutal.
Really brutal. Having played a wonderful show in London the night before, and of course it's Arctangent Festival the weekend coming up, which they're supposed to be playing at as well. So we're now racing to get them replacement equipment in time for that. But it's always awful, isn't it? So
yeah,
I cannot recommend more, dear listeners, if you're gigging musicians, to have a deadbolt fitted to your van. It cost a couple of hundred quid to get one fitted at a garage, and it means that people trying to break into your van will either need a circular saw or to steal the van itself. It makes a big difference. But
that's a good tip.
Yes. Do
Polymath have a van?
We do. Yes.
Oh,
we,
do you? Yeah.
We have a Transit which we make look as bad as possible.
Yes.
It looks super crummy, and we all dented it in, and like the paintwork's all scraped, and we tried to make it look as bad as possible. We didn't pay much for it.
Sure.
But we've made it look awful, and it's actually fitted with a pair of deadbolts. So really there is no way of stealing our gear. We all members of Polymath have experienced that in the past, and it's I think something you learn from, and I think we are very good at monitoring our van, where we park it, things like that. Also we have very good instrument insurance. I mean, that's something everyone should get. Do you have insurance for your instruments, Naomi?
I do, yeah.
Who do you use for insurance?
It is through my bank, actually. It's just it's like a contents insurance one. It's not a specific like musical equipment one.
Ah. Is it insured outside of your home as well for when you're on shows?
No,
then?
Just inside. Oh, wow. Yeah.
I see.
It's funny. That was the first thing I was thinking about, was a band I sessioned with who are total gearheads, extensive, rare amounts of gear. I remember one of the last gigs I did with them in 2019, they were telling me all about their actual music gear insurance. And I was thinking I really should do that. I don't have anything of nearly of the value that they sort of have, or the rarity that they have, but I don't think you can be careful enough, obviously.
No.
How about yourself? I'm guessing you have.
Yeah. Insurance. Yeah. I'm very thorough with it. Like I keep my stuff in my garage. Is attached to my house here. It's like the lower floor of half of my house here. Yeah. So I store my garage, all my equipment there, which I have I have one of the approved locks fitted on my garage door, because of course, don't forget, dear listener, insurance companies, even music insurance companies, are looking to not pay you. So the small print of insurance is awful for musical instruments. Like I understand the Alpha Male Teapot, I do have insurance. I'm very concerned about the fact that their gear was in a van where the gear was accessible. Like you could break into the front of the van and get to the boot, if that makes sense. Like it was a car van, I don't know what these things are called, rather than it being a Transit or something where the boot is completely separated.
Not a splitter. As
exactly, not a splitter, yes. So, and I do think there's, I guess insurance depends on where you're going, but I think there are clauses around that that make it difficult to claim. And I have to have a special lock on my garage. Also, Polymath have our own lockup where we store stuff. We also had the locks changed on that to be these sort of approved locks, and all of our stuff is insured by Music Guy. So I actually pay a chunk. I pay £70 a month but I have so much stuff. This is the thing. I've got whatever it is. Like last count is 30 something guitars, and 200 pedals, 10 amps, and that's not including.
It's a no-brainer.
Exactly. So
yeah, you can't be careful enough. And I mean, this I've not spoken to anyone in the band, but my guess from how the post was written was that this happened in daylight. This wasn't a middle of the night sort of happening.
I think that's the worst thing for them. Yeah, they literally they went into a service station for breakfast and left their van parked out. And when they came out, the saddest thing is they didn't even notice. They then got back in their van, drove to Liverpool, where they're from, and didn't notice until they came to unload the van.
Yeah.
Which is really sad. Like that's, that must have been, that feeling at that moment must have been absolutely gutting. And if this is not, allegory enough, dear listener, to make sure your instruments are insured. Sorry, go on.
Sorry, no, I was just going to say these people know exactly what they were doing. If they literally took the time to leave the vehicle looking intact afterward.
Yeah.
Didn't just run off with everything open and abandoned looking. Like these are people who you know, absolutely knew what they were doing, potentially followed them there. You just wouldn't know. But like, people are just poised and steeled and ready to do awful things like this to people who have worked extremely hard to build their gear collections.
Exactly. Exactly. So, so we'll see. I hope that they get their insurance money through and that they're able to replace the gear. In the meantime, I'm going to sort of, you know, build them a pedal boards and send them instruments and get them whatever they can. But, you know, it brings me on that this is not, they're not sponsoring this podcast in any way, but I use Music Guard, who I moved to from another insurance company before, and I've actually found them great. Like, really good at getting back to you and really clear with what the terms and conditions are and what I needed to do to make sure my stuff is covered. I didn't feel like these guys were trying to rip me off. They were trying to make sure I had done the appropriate things so they could support me if the worst happened. And I thought that was quite rare. So I do recommend Music Guard. Personally, dear listener, if this has been enough to make you think maybe I should get insurance, you know, it certainly wouldn't be £70 a month to anyone insuring, you know, their guitar, pedal board and amplifier. It's because, you know, I live in this weird pit of equipment.
An ornate cube, I would say. Exactly. I would say you are a highly furnished musician.
Yeah, exactly.
Indeed.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, that room reverb we can hear is just the necks, the necks and bodies of many hundreds of guitars.
Oh, I tell you what, Naomi, this heat wave, the amount of work I have had to do to get guitars back playable.
Oh, it's brutal, isn't it? Our instruments are not used to this.
No.
Our human vessels are not used to this. It's, yeah, my non-existent hat is off to all of our American friends who live and gig and practice and play in year-round heat, because us UK pals over here are us and our guitars are languishing.
Yeah.
Languishing hard. Not today, it's a lot cooler today. Is it cooler in Brighton?
We had a big old thunderstorm. Yeah, it's Brighton's close enough. It's better to say Brighton, but it's still really hot. We had a thunderstorm this morning, but now it's just really close and everything.
Yes, so, you know. Yeah, close is my next least favorite weather for my instruments.
There you go.
I don't trust what it does to my intonation either.
No. Everything's ruined, which is.
Have you got anything by way of like dehumidifiers or conditioners or anything?
No, I'm
specific
too,
to gear.
I wish I did. I wish I did think about things like that. But I've always, so this goes back to the days of GAC. The acoustic department always had like dehumidifiers on the go all the time.
Yeah.
And in the bass department, we didn't care about that. Like, we didn't even use tuners. You know, for the basis, like, we were like, if it's close enough for rock and roll, it's fine.
Right.
And so I think I took that sort of that attitude. I always thought of the acoustic department as very geeky. They were geeks. They really cared about the woods. They really cared about the temperature of the acoustic department. Right. And, you know, we were like,
so they were like the Jobsworths of the.
They would, you know, if you looked up search history on the computers in the acoustic department, it would be, you know, researching ideal humidity for acoustics made out of a particular type of wood. Whereas if you did it in the bass department, we'd be researching like mustache wax. You know, that was the difference.
You'd go to their till and be like, oh my God, did an acoustic guitar write this?
Exactly. But
mustache wax.
We did used to have, my moustache used to be massive and very curly, and the guy who I ran the bass department with also had a huge curly moustache. And
this was the other life passion fueling the bass department.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah, we were very we were into Warhammer and
this curly moustaches. Just gets better.
We loved Warhammer, curly moustaches, waistcoats, and bass guitars. Yeah, that was the GAC bass department.
Amazing.
I think that's why Mark Packham left the GAC bass department, actually. But
did he struggle in the moustache growing department?
Actually, he used to have a fantastic one, but he doesn't like to admit it.
Oh. Maybe I should have let mine grow when I worked in the bass department.
This is it. I think it's an essential.
We could be distant cousins with my hair growing abilities. I can tell you that much. In regards, specifically in regards to like brows and moustache. Let's just say it's a very conscious choice that I remain clean, moustached. Anyway, I'll break the gender norm eventually. Maybe when I turn 40, I'll just let the tash smash.
As you should.
Anyway, bringing us firmly back onto topic.
Yes. So I'm choosing. We've got such a big list of stuff to talk about. Should we talk about these secret Ashdown bases that I sent you pictures of earlier?
I would love to, because I thought they looked absolutely smashing.
So because these were pictures of the models that are just about to be packaged. They're in China at the moment. Okay. They're about to be packaged up and sent over to me, and they're the test examples. So these were like pictures that have been taken. I sent you a couple of pictures that have been taken on the rack by the company in China, and they've been like, here they are, ready to go. Just like they're kind of proof of postage images or something, so they're not really very good, but you can kind of see what's going on there a little bit. What did you think, and describe what they were?
Okay, so you're happy for me to describe? Finishes,
this is, it's, I goddamn designed these bases. I will leak this embargo a year ahead of their release if I want to.
I love when you go full, I make the embargo, I break the embargo. it's good. It's a dopamine hit to me. Well, there's four bases in the image in front of me, in a rack, indeed looking like they're absolutely ready to be packed. And three of the four, dear listener, are shell pink. Of course they are. They bloody are. And then we've got a beautiful, vivid, is it a Lake Placid-ish effect? It's a beautiful deep. It's quite a deep blue, quite a deep like mid blue.
That's right. Yeah, it was basically there was a big argument at Ashdown between I like Pelham blue, and they like Lake Placid, which is lighter, and so we agreed on a halfway house. That we found a color that the firm we were using in China could do that was a halfway house between Pelham and Lake Placid, and that's what we've gone for.
Awesome. Well, I think it's a really nice compromise. It's enough of a mid that no one would mistake it for black, I don't think, even on stage. So it's got that nice sort of pop there for those who are keen to stay away from sort of black finishes. More importantly, I am looking at four matching headstocks, which is such a nice touch. Matching headstocks in shell pink, I'm a huge fan of in particular. Yeah. They're really smart looking. And looking at the neck, is it roasted maple?
We've gone roasted maple on the neck.
A beautiful dark roast. It's gorgeous.
It's come out really nice, actually, the dark roast. But we've gone maple on the board. So we've not gone roasted on the neck. So you get this lovely two-tone thing where the board's going to be that lovely light maple, but the back of the neck has that rich dark feel to it. I think it looks lovely on the headstock against the shell pink as well.
It does, yeah, because it further sort of defines the finish on the headstock. It's a really nice touch, really classy. I'm trying to explain for the listener who doesn't have the image in front of them, of course, but I'm also trying to do it in an engaging way, but also without sounding a little bit thick myself, so it's a little challenging. However, so looking at the rack of the four bases, I can't see the greater details outside of the one sort of at the front of the image. But what I can see is that one of them is a short scale, if you'd like to tell us anything enticing or exciting about that.
So that's right, yeah. So of the three models there are three shapes, well, technically two shapes. Mm-hmm. One is the grail, which is Ashdown's jazz bass. Mm-hmm. The second one is The Saint, which is a little bit more original. It is offset, so it's a Jaguar-esque shape, but it's certainly not that. It's got sort of a Reverend-y feel to it, The Saint.
Lovely.
But it is that sort of inspired Jaguar offset 50s angular thing, and it's PJ. And so we've done that in a short scale with a reduced size body, and we've done it in a 34-inch scale as well. So it's not just the neck that will change, the body is a slimmed and reduced version in the offset short scale.
Awesome. So that's what we're looking at in the sort of middle two basses in of four. So it's a regular scale body and then a downscaled body for the 30-inch scale.
Exactly.
That is a lovely touch. Awesome.
All in shell pink. It's a satin glitter shell pink, which doesn't quite come out in the pictures. So we've gone for that. So jazz pickups obviously in the jazz one, PJs in the short scale and the normal Saint, matching headstock shell pink, roasted maple necks and maple boards.
Beautiful. On those. Can you tell us anything about the pickups? Anything unusual or different between them?
So there was the balance. Like the thing that that I'd been spec'd with by Ashdown was to make these interesting basses that we could make affordable, that we could price for under 500 quid. That's awesome. The balance. So you have to make some exchanges somewhere. And I found that the thing I was more willing to sacrifice was the pickups than the hardware. So I've kept Wilkinson hardware, which was difficult to do to keep the price point I wanted. We've managed it. I had to lose Hipshot tuners. I've gone for Wilkinson tuners, but it's still Wilkinson bridges with brass saddles, which is very cool.
They're still awesome. It's absolutely an okay trade-off, I'd say.
Yeah, and the pickups, I've gone for like the standard sort of OEM ones that are provided by the brand. So they're more like your Fender Mexican or Squire Vint Mod style pickups sort of things. So we'll see. I like these are the prototypes. I haven't heard these yet. So I could get them and be like, these aren't great. But honestly, I tend to find that cheap bass pickups sound great. Cheap bass pickups tend to want to go for high output, almost to maybe make up for other things. I don't know why, but that's actually quite popular anyway in the way most bass players want to sound these days. So it tends to be a great sounding thing. Like, you know, I always come back to the fact that when I spent all this time changing pickups in my main jazz bass and ended up with the EMGs, which cost, you know, like 200 quid for a set. And then at a band practice, I AB'd my 60s jazz bass with EMGs with my classic vibe with just the stock, Squire pickups in there. And they didn't sound really any different. After the amount of gain I'm putting on things, there really wasn't much in it at all. You know, both sounded fantastic. So for that reason, I was sort of happy to go with, we'll just go for the simplest pickups and we'll see what they sound like.
Cool. That's some really interesting insight. And as you were saying, what you were saying about the sort of certain feel of budget bass pickup and sort of what they seem to go for, sort of tonally classic vibe, was exactly what popped to mind, because I've played some cracking classic vibes with stock pickups that I quite happily wouldn't change. I do think it's a really good call that of any part where maybe that exchange, as you say, is going to be made, that it is the pickup. That's obviously something that if someone down the line did want to look at swapping out, that it's very doable indeed.
Yeah.
Awesome. But I mean, obviously that's not the aim.
No.
In the new bass that someone is picking up. But I think it's really nice that it's quite an easy thing to have to look at later.
The reason I wanted to go for Fender style pickups was because they're so easy to change as well, and so easy to update. And I do want to just provide the simple basics that someone might want, the things that are expensive to change, which are getting a bass refinished. So I'm offering cool, interesting finishes, and then, you know, the pickups are changeable. I sent you a second picture, Naomi, just now, with some of the other things that are being sent to me, because we're also doing like a metallic moss green version of everything with a black plate, which is a hard colour to describe. How would you describe the green?
I am respectfully looking. Let's have a look and see. Oh, beautiful. That is a really... I want to say it's a really ornate finish. That's not really the right word. It's like a... Am I right in thinking it's quite a metallic?
Yeah, it's finish? Very metallic.
Yeah, it's if you imagine a sort of a moss finish with a gold gently put through it. There's a sort of a gold element to the green, if that makes sense, while being quite sort of mid to dark.
Yes,
I suppose sort of this a similar temperature to the blue, the sort of balanced homage to Lake Placid Blue that we're talking about. Quite a metallic sort of mossy, sort of deeper grassy green. It's lovely. It's a finish I've not seen really on the market elsewhere at the moment.
No,
which. Is great.
I'm hoping that will be the case. Now, the secret is, dear listener, that the green one I really designed for me. That was the base that I wanted, and it was great that Ashdown were like, yeah, that sounds cool. We'll make 500 of them. But really, I just wanted one for me. So that one's for me. But I actually think it's come out real nice, and I'm really looking forward to sharing this with you, listener. As soon as I get the, I'm not going to share these pictures with you because they're not very good. You know, they're just sort of phone pictures on a rack somewhere. So as soon as they turn up, I'm going to share them with you all ahead of their release because I think this is going to be great. I'm really proud of these. I think they might actually be awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. I think as someone who also works with product from that point on in my work, sometimes you do get that little pang of excitement seeing something like that sort of at the factory ready to go. But it, exactly like you've just described to the listener, there's nothing really visually pleasing about it. It's obviously for you, it must be quite a nice little milestone seeing what you had in CAD or Photoshop slowly but surely becoming a very real instrument, hightailing its way to you to try. I am very keen to see more full-on images of these.
I realized there's something you can't see on the short scale. I realized, Naomi, the short scale offset Jaguar-esque one, which we're calling the Saint. I've added a metallic blue speed stripe.
Lovely.
So, yeah, in the sort of that offset, that Mustang position for the speed stripe.
Very nice. So, that is lovely. Cool. Very awesome indeed. Did you say that the short scale has a PJ?
PJ. Yeah, PJ on the short scale. The short scale has two options. It would be PJ and also a single Thunderbird pickup in the middle.
Oh, lovely. Okay.
So we've ordered a small number of each of them, and we're going to see which one is more popular. Because I was like, oh, the Thunderbird one's going to sell more because it's cooler. And they were like, the PJ will sell more because who wants a one pickup Thunderbird bass? It's ridiculous. You're mad. But they let me do it nonetheless. So
I would say not that mad, because I could definitely see people picking that up and being quite into it. I'm pretty sure we've had the single pickup, two pickup debate before.
But yeah, I think their point is literally that, you know, that look at the Fender Mustang bass, the PJ Mustang bass. It's everywhere. Like, everyone is buying one. You know,
it is. For those of us who are not very good at decisions, these two pickup Mustangs are a must-have indeed.
Exactly. So whereas the, you know, the single Thunderbird style pickup's a thing, isn't it? It's very much it's a stylistic choice.
It's a stylistic choice, and it's absolutely a tonal commitment to have a single middle position pickup like that. Cool. Well, I mean, if people are anything like me, they will end up buying both to have the option.
yes. We will see. We'll see. Awesome. We'll see what happens as they wing their way to us. Now, before we go, because we're coming to the end of the podcast, before we move over onto the Patreon, last week Matt and I talked about what amplifier you would have if you could only have one amplifier, like a. I think we're not looking for the answer. Doesn't need to be, oh, I'd need to have something that's able to do this, this, and this, and the other. It would just have to be, what is your absolute favorite? And it doesn't even have to be a really amazing high, value item. It just, if you just have one, and it can be for base, like you obviously choose a base one, Naomi, but yeah, I chose a base one, but it would just be, what would that one amplifier be?
Oh, dearie dear. Having just talked about being being very bad at decisions.
Because I guess for the longest time you've used Aguilar.
I have, absolutely. And I'm a little bit loath to say this because there are just such a world of pre-existing magical amps that have stood the test of time, etc. And it, you know, the Aguilars that I've played have been more modern, obviously solid state designs. But yeah, at the risk of sounding a little bit safe, I absolutely loved my Tonehammer 500.
Really?
Yeah, I loved it. There are other answers I could give you based on amps that I've heard, but I'm going to be absolutely dead straight down the line with one that I've played and gigged and actually had a real feel for tonally, and I would say the 500.
Oh, that's absolutely the answer I wanted. Something that you played that you knew around. Not like, you know, like, sorry, dear listener, I'll talk in bass on this one for a minute. But, you know, I don't expect you to be like, oh, yeah, the Ampeg B15. Because, you know, none of us have owned a B15. We've played them at studios for a bit and everyone says they're fantastic. But honestly, I don't know how to shape a tone out of one because I don't spend enough time with them. Yeah. It needs to be an amp that you know like the back of your hand, that you're like, I know that I can sound as good as I've ever wanted to sound with this amplifier. What is it about the Tonehammer that draws you to it? Is there something specific that it does?
Let me not get lost now between the Tonehammer and the AG. So basically I had a Tonehammer 500 for the longest time.
Which is the smaller one, right?
No, so there was or is, I'm not sure if it's discontinued now. At the time that I had the 500, there was the 350, smaller again, a 350 watt, and then the 500. And there now, I believe, is the Tonehammer 750 as well.
Right.
So the 500 was the more powerful of the two at the time that I had it. Sorry, I'm just trying to double check. Does it have what I think it has, which is Dwive?
Yeah, the 500 has a separate drive control. Drive. So you've got gain, master. You've got like a really interesting mid control as well, right? Because you've got a mid level and a mid frequency. So you can choose what areas of the mids that you're boosting or cutting, which is kind of cool.
Yes, absolutely. You can. So, sorry, my pause there was to try to remember if it was the Tonehammer or the AG, which I owned later.
Right.
The AG 700. And that doesn't have a drive and has a slightly different tonal profile. The Tonehammer, I'll be honest, I owned it at a time where I didn't sort of know what I now know about tone sculpting, and I still managed to craft a tone that I still feel proud of. So I think its character and its tonal profile and its controls and being very, very responsive in its sort of EQ, and then sort of also just suiting my needs in regards to any other connectivity, etc. It really, really suited what I was doing to it, which was just needing a really full, really loud, very driven sound. And this was before I sort of really got into things I would now see as very sensible approaches, like, you know, more parallel processing instead of having a nice compressed clean, doing the leg work while a driven parallel will sort of occupy the sort of higher frequencies or higher bands. The Tonehammer 500 sort of held my hand tonally and gave me a fantastic result before I sort of knew anything about the more nuanced aspects of building a tone. It weathered many, many, many gigs and performed so far above what I thought to be sort of its power capabilities. It stood up on some really, really loud stages. And let's just say the session gig where I realized I needed to move up a little bit in power was was bloody loud. that's how far we were able to go. It was, and I'm talking almost like my bloody Valentine level loud. That was how far up the 500 was able to go before I realized I needed something a little more powerful.
Well, I'm surprised to hear that you'd ever need anything louder than a 500 watt bass head.
Mm-hmm. This was a loud band that I'm talking about.
Evidently.
There are some terrifying things an AC30 can do with the right pedals going through it. That's it for me. There are, of course, very close contenders in and around that. But basing it on experience and...
Yes.
And enjoying its tone, it would be the Tonehammer 500 for me.
Very cool.
I would love to know yours. Did you go through yours on the last one? Or were you curious to pick up on mine?
I was just curious to hear yours, actually, to see where you went with it, if it was just a simple sort of tried and tested thing, or if it was an aspirational amp or anything. Yeah, like, I won't go into it again. I think we did it on the Patreon last time. I can't remember, dear listener, exactly, but... But yeah, the one for me, actually, which you might be surprised to hear, Naomi, is the Harkey HA 5500. Sorry, dear listener, you obviously heard me, if it was on the main episode, I can't remember, but you heard me bang on about this last week, but I don't think there's ever been a better amp head made. I love that it's solid state with a valve preamp. Obviously, that's something that's echoed in the Ashdown gear that I play today.
Yeah.
But just the nature of the controls on the 5500 are amazing. The 10-band graphic EQ, which you can bring in or out, is insanely useful. Outside of that, they have a contour control with a high pass and a low pass. So there's just that extra bit of tone shaping. Or if you want to keep it simple to just basically a bass and a treble control, you can do that. There's the gain is dealt with really interestingly, because you have just a master volume, but then your preamp, you have two controls, not one, not just one gain. One controlling your valve preamp, the 12AX7 in the preamp, and one controlling the solid state preamp. So you can blend up those two, or shut one down completely and use the other one. You want a really valvey sound, shut down that solid state one, boost the valve in the front end and use that. It was just so good. It was just so... No one's ever done anything like that since.
No. As you're talking about it, I think I've played... Is it the 3500?
Yeah, there are a few. There's 25s, 35, there's a 5000. There's loads.
Yeah. I think at some gigs, I happen to just kind of get one as the backline and play it. And Harkey, I will... Harkey is a hill I will die on. Absolutely. I think they're such an underrated brand.
Unbelievably.
Yeah, in bass world, they've created some absolutely fantastic amps, and maybe not always enjoyed the glory of some of the bigger sort of more ubiquitous brands over the years.
Yeah. Yeah, I completely agree. I don't know if it's their marketing or what it is that's made Harkey go out of fashion at the moment. I personally love that they still look the same as they always have. You know, I love that they've got that 80s. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's cool. It looks like old hi-fi gear, and I love it. I love the simplicity of it, because you know what? They don't care. They don't care about making something lightweight. They don't care about making something good looking for the kids. They just care about making a fantastic sounding head that looks stupid. It's just a black box with a blue lines on the top and bottom, and their ridiculous logo where it looks like they chose a free font. You know, but it doesn't matter, because they don't care about that. They care about making an amp head that sounds better than anything else. And for that reason,
Well, that's a fundamental passion I think we can absolutely both agree on, for sure.
There we go. But that does, in fact, bring us to the close of this week's episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast. Dear listener, thank you for joining us. We're going to go over to the Patreon, where we're going to talk about some deals that I've been finding on Reverb. We're going to talk about some cool Grecos and stuff like that. Maybe a bit about Breedlove Acoustics, because that's been something that people have been talking about in the Guitar Nerds group. So... join us over there. You can become a Patreon supporter for as little as $1 a month. At the dollar tier, you get this episode ad-free and early every week. $5, well, early when I actually get back to doing the podcast. properly. $5 gets you access to our Patreon special episodes and our back catalogue of these episodes, which must be something crazy now. I don't know how many episodes we're up to now of all time. I don't know. Do you know, dear listener? It was 600? Maybe more? I'm not sure. It's a long time. It feels like a long time. $10 gets you the lot. Plus, I'll sing you my thanks at the end of every episode. Find us on your favourite social media platforms. Join the Guitar Nerds group on Facebook to get involved in our weekly discussion. I tell you what, Facebook's getting so out of fashion now that I need to find a new platform to sort of promote more at the end.
I'm glad to
have a think.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear that. Because I enjoy going on Facebook for the group. The group is a lovely place to hang out on.
It's the only thing I use Facebook for now.
Yeah, mostly that is the case for me as well. Yeah, it's a lovely place on a rapidly aging platform. So
it's a terrible platform. Yeah. It's just full of hate. It's just full of people telling you what they don't like about things. It's just abuse and nastiness everywhere. Mm-hmm. The comments sections of anything on Facebook are always abysmal. I hate having to go on there. All I do, what I've done is made a real effort to, if I'm ever on Facebook, I watch animal videos on the dodo, because then it makes Facebook just feed me animal videos, so I don't have to deal.
Oh, so you train the algorithm. That's not a bad move. The worst thing you can do is read news articles via Facebook, because
you don't want to do that. Yeah,
the comments, they get to you.
It's always bad. Anything news, anything general information, there's always someone telling you sort of why they hate another type of person for whatever reason. That's what Facebook has become, dear listener. Yeah. Sorry, on a little bit of a rant there. But I assure you, dear listener, if you're looking for a way to make Facebook less of the absolute cesspit that it is, then watching cute animal videos is a great way to trick the algorithm. I would say one thing to avoid, however. I once looked at a watch on the internet, and now Facebook has been serving me watch adverts nonstop for the last 6 months. I bought a watch. I'm happy with my watch purchase. But also I like buying watches, so I wish it would stop, because I'm probably
I like buying watches, so I've also bought 8, but nothing to do with the ads. I love that. Sorry, I'm chuckling away because that's so specific.
Yeah, I know. God damn it. Oh, well, anyway, dear listener, we're going to go over to Patreon. Join us there. We've been the Guitar Nerds. You've been lovely. Farewell.
Goodbye.
I'm going to sing you all about my Patreons. Yes, oh, I am going to sing you all about my Patreons. Yeah.
Abandoned British rule. Andy McKenzie. Loki Apollutiano. Shabu Kilabu Kialabakabuji. Silly Bakaka Kamuka, the knock of the bucket of lip of the Papada Shabadabo.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.